I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian King, Millwall goalkeeper from 1967 to 1975. I spent the happiest years of my playing career at the Den, and I'd love to share some of the memories, stories and personalities with you in my new book, The Lion's King. In my time, I've met some amazing characters, including Harry Cripps, Barry Kitchener, Sir Alf Ramsey, as well as the great Gordon Banks and Lev Yashin himself. My book is packed with laughs, tears, tragedies and triumphs. So join me in my journey down Coldblow Lane and beyond. The Lion's King, available now for $19.99 at www.littlehellbooks.com. That's www.littlehellbooks.com. Come on, you lions.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Good morning, dear listeners. Welcome to a Sunday morning edition of Achtung Millwall. We're going to review the 0-0 draw with Birmingham yesterday. And joining me is a really welcome guest back. Just saying, I haven't spoken to him in a long time. It's Mr. Charlie Mahoney. Welcome back, Charlie.
Thanks, Nick. How are you?
I'm torn, Charlie. Actually, I've been doing some little notes so that we've got something to which I haven't shared with Charlie listeners, incidentally. So I've got the notes. Charlie's ad-libbing it, but I'm torn. I don't know whether we're having a good season or a bad season, Charlie. I'm hoping that you might help me reach a conclusion on this, because on the one hand, that was the fifth straight draw, just two goals scored in that sequence of five. We've got an injury list as long as your arm, and yet we're sitting in 11th position with just two defeats all season, and we're still, at the moment, as you and I are recording this, Charlie, 3 points off sixth spot. I don't know whether we're having a great season or a poor season.
It's so difficult to call, and when I was watching the game yesterday, I was thinking this is really hard to sort of weigh up. Because the football and you know what we're actually watching is not good at all. It's not enjoyable at times, quite painful.
Yeah.
And in the other sense, it's, you know, how do I assess it? As you say, in the context of the season, you never want to try and put too positive or too negative a spin on things. So reaching any sort of conclusion after that sort of result and the last few results is I don't know.
I don't know what tactics Gary Rowett can really realistically play. I mean, I there's always this online reaction to say, oh, we're shit, we can't score goals. And that much is true. Certainly, goal scoring is our problem at the moment anyway. But in terms of options to change it, I don't know that we've got many. Unless we're going to impose a lot of responsibility on youngsters like Tyler Bury and Hayden Muller and others, you know, bring them in and pitch them into this situation, which is probably going to be a bit unfair on them, because they'll be making their league debuts in a season that's clearly, it's going to be, you know, it's a tough schedule, isn't it? You know, it's a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday type season. So I don't really know what options Gary Rowett has other than to build on the strength of the side, which is defence. And I think it's entitled to expect his forwards to do a little bit better on occasions. But I don't see many other options. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, we're not blessed with a massive amount of depth, even though there's probably a little bit more than we had this time a couple of seasons ago. But one of the main issues is that even if we don't have injury problems and we can put out our strongest side, I've always thought that we've had too many sort of creative players at the club who still don't have enough of an impact on the outcome of a game.
Mm.
So, you know, you can talk about players like Jed Wallace and, you know, Mahoney, I don't know, Bradshaw, the likes of Bodvarsson. I know people aren't keen on Bodvarsson, but that is the kind of player that we probably wouldn't have had a couple of seasons ago. They just don't do enough to actually change what happens within a game, even though they technically might be a little bit better than what we used to have.
Yeah.
There's this real sense that we need people to stand up and be counted when games are passing us by. And this is one of the chief reasons that we're having so many draws at the moment, I think. We're kind of bystanders in games, really, when a few kind of differences would
make a difference. Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's fine margins, but just a couple of additions maybe, or a couple of players who we know are half decent, just sort of like going an extra mile would have a major sort of impact, really.
I mean, starts yesterday for Bodvarsson up front, I thought did okay, Charlie. I don't know how you saw his performance. I mean, he's clearly, he's got a piano on his back after, you know, that miss the other week where he missed a sitter, as some would say. He missed a good chance, or had a good chance saved in midweek. So fair play to him. He seems to have some bottle to him in that he comes back out and he performed quite well. I saw some naming him man of the match yesterday, which I thought might be a bit, going a little bit far, but also starts for Juris Skalak. And, you know, he wasn't, for me, Skalak didn't exactly rip up any trees yesterday, but he wasn't awful. So I suppose there's a start. But he's the kind of player, Charlie, you know, just developing your point there about players standing up and taking opportunities. I mean, Skalak is an international quality striker. He's played he's played in the Premier League in his career. You'd have thought that yesterday would have been a day for him to seize that chance. He's been out in a cold, you know, and then here he is named as a starter, raised eyebrows, but you didn't really see enough from him yesterday. It's that kind of idea of players not turning it on when needed. I think that's where Gary Rowett will feel shortchanged a little bit from this parts of this squad at the moment.
Yeah, well, in regards to Skalak, I don't think he had a bad game, but just don't really remember him doing anything either.
Anonymous.
And I think that's quite a bad indictment, given that there's been a lot of speculation about the money that he's on and, you know, some of the expectations that we had when we signed him. And I think that must, as you say, it must be hugely frustrating for Rowett to bring in a player like that who might have a point to prove and just not really doing it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, we were just speaking off air about the impact of COVID and from a football perspective, no fans being in the stadium. It's hit us on the field in the sense that there's no real atmosphere to try and spur on. Is that the right word? Spur on Jiri. He would have had some comment directed at him to get involved yesterday in the normal circumstances. It's hit us financially in terms of, you know, no fans, no money. Therefore, strengthening in January will probably be a bit of an art form for Gary Rowett. We do seem to, under Rowett, generate more players of quality by one, in, you know, whether it be on loan or signings, Charlie. I wanted to, because I haven't spoken to you since, I think you said it was just when Gary Rowett took over. We haven't spoken since. I just wanted to get your sense of him, really. I mean, are you a fan of Gary, or are you sceptical of him? I mean, how do you see him in terms of middle management?
I'm actually really fond of him, to be honest. I think he's done a pretty good job overall. I really like the way that he assesses a game, the way he speaks afterwards. It feels as if there are very few platitudes in what he comes out with. He's always got something quite intelligent to say without being too pompous, if that makes sense. So, I've been happy with the job he's done. I think this current spell now is probably where the biggest question marks exist over his style or what's happening, but I don't entirely blame him. A lot of the discussions I've had with other Millwall supporters use the fact, well, on the back of, what is it, five draws now?
Yeah.
You know, this idea, is it any better than what we had under Harris? And for me, that's not really the point. The point is that's, if anything, that gives you a reflection on the kind of players we have at our disposal and our budget. If two managers have struggled to get anything particularly exciting out of this squad, then maybe it's not something that should just be put onto the manager. I like Rowett. I think he's been a great addition to the club. He would have been my choice as well out of the kind of candidates that were spoken about at the time, even though we don't get the full sense of that. We don't know who was interviewed, who'd applied, etc. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Rowett, and I wouldn't necessarily put the shortcomings of the team on him at this point in time either.
I mean, we touched on this in the show we did in the week about the kinds of players that Gary Rowett likes, and if that's the right term, and the kind of players he generally doesn't seem to fancy so much. And unfortunately, I think we're probably looking at our own Ben Thompson in that category. We're probably talking about Jiří Skadák for many other reasons, and I'm not putting Ben and Jiří in the same sentence, really. So I think they're two very, very different players in terms of heart. But when you look at the injury list, I'm just looking at it now, Charlie. I mean, Billy Mitchell, a bit of an unknown quantity, but highly, highly rated at the club, and clearly was hoped to be the kind of, the man that fills the shoes of Jason Malumbi, who now seems to be pretty set at Brighton. But also looking even at Mason Bennett and Kenneth Zahor and to be honest, Conor Mahoney. I mean, all of these are players of real quality, and they not your typical Millwall players in some ways, because they do have that extra level to their game. They've come from clubs where, you know, that next step is where they were. And I mean, my feeling on Rowett is that he's still, largely speaking, managing a League One squad, really, in some ways, with one or two jewels in amongst the dust. You know, I think until the squad itself has been worked over properly by him, I think only then can we truly assess him, because it's still really Neil Harris's squad that he's dealing with, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's weird with Rowett, because I think he admires what Harris actually gave to the club. He was very fond of what he took over, in terms of, you know, we commented lots on the fact that I've taken over a brilliant group here in terms of their mentality and attitude. And it felt like he was saying that his task was, how do I augment that with my own style? You know, I can't just... In fact, I watched a podcast quite recently. It was called Tea and Medals, that featured Gary Rowett. And it was like, it's two sort of military guys who go around and they speak to big businesses or football clubs or things like that. And they talk about how can you draw on some of the kind of psychological things that big companies use and the military use. And
right.
It's hard to kind of describe,
like a resilience and a willingness to, you know, change within a framework, that kind of stuff, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. So the guest each week might be kind of from a different background, but there's always these kind of these commonalities between what they're on about, kind of thing. And he was actually saying that, I could probably, if I really went out my way, I could probably persuade John Berylson to spend a little bit more money on a player than we usually would.
Yep.
So if I do that, like, what do I compromise in terms of what makes Millwall? Like, you know, we could go out and spend millions on a player who's got, like, outstanding technical attributes.
Yep.
But would that upset the balance too much? And I think every time you sign a player at our place, there's always that kind of consideration. You know, is it just technique that we go in for, or do we have to make sure that they have the certain mental kind of qualities that makes you a success at a club like this? So
this is the really cliche of the Millwall type player, Charlie. It's that indefinable thing, because some are and some simply aren't, and it's always interesting to see who is and who isn't. I'll have to check that podcast. What was it called? Trophies and Medals.
Tea and Medals.
Tea and Medals, sorry.
I'll send the link over, actually. On YouTube. It's a good watch.
Yeah, do. And I'll stick it in the show notes, because I think that sounds an interesting watch. I'm hoping that we're softening the impact of yesterday's dreary game on listeners, because it was a pretty tough watch, in all honesty, overall. I mean, I've only picked out a few a chance for Troy Parrott. Do you like the look of Troy Parrott, incidentally?
I don't. Sure. Yeah, well, I think he looks quite clever.
He does look intelligent, doesn't he?
I was slightly worried when we signed him that people were expecting us to have brought in an already ready-made sort of striker. I think it's very unfair to have those expectations of an 18-year-old who's not really played any sort of competitive football before this. I think he was even capped for the Republic of Ireland before he'd made an actual start for Tottenham, to be honest. I don't know, the obvious parallel that people kind of make is the one with Harry Kane. But people have got to remember that Kane himself wasn't even as highly rated as probably Parrott is at that age. So it took him quite a while to bed in at Millwall, if I remember rightly as well.
It's a tough environment. You're playing with men. I mean, Troy Parrott is 18, so he's barely out of childhood. I know that football is an unforgiving business, so he's got to learn fast. And he came close. I mean, I've got a chance here, 16 minutes. There was a nice crossing from Bedvarsson, who played well, I thought, yesterday. And that was it was probably like an inch or two short of touching that in, Troy Parrott, and that would have changed the game entirely if we'd have got that crucial goal in front.
I think that's possibly the kind of chance that he may have scored if he just was a little bit more experienced and a little bit more kind of, I wouldn't say it was for want of any sort of ability, more just cuteness, really.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to establish yourself. You're in amongst a group of senior professionals, Charlie, and, you know, they've been there for some time. They've got this, you know, Jake Cooper's got this almighty record of appearances in the Championship. You're playing alongside, you know, Sean Hutchinson, ex-player of the year, some big personalities, Alex Pearce, Murray Wallace, you know, these are all players that he would be looking at thinking, wow, this is what I would maybe, well, he's probably got more skill. He must know his worth on that front. But, you know, that kind of being an embedded player is worth a lot, isn't it, in terms of confidence? And I think that's probably just a little bit where he's going to develop as yet. It will come. I think he's got the basic ingredients. He's got the X factor too. I want to touch on the defence, Charlie, because that is our strength at the end of the day. I mean, there was a couple of chances I saw that Birmingham had in late in the second half, in the first half rather, where good defensive work. And we're almost taking this for granted now. Murray Wallace taking away a chance in 31 minutes, and Bart performs world class saves almost as a you're expecting him to get it to do those now. That's quite an attribute, mate, isn't it? I think it's easy to dismiss defence sometimes. It's you don't concede a goal, you're not going to lose the game, and which is, I know, is where we're at. But that's got to be a great baseline for Gary Rowett to build upon.
Yeah, I think the defence is outstanding. I think the kind of trio of established centre-backs we have been absolutely brilliant. Hutchinson and Cooper, particularly on the pitch, and I get the sense that often when Pearce misses out by actually starting games, he still has a massive impact in terms of his personality. And then obviously you've got Murray Wallace, who since last season has just gone from strength to strength, really. I remember when we first started playing him in this wing-back position, I had real concerns, and just he's answered all of the questions for me in that role. Bringing Scott Malone in has probably been an even bigger positive, because there's a sense of competition now.
Yeah.
You just can't really fault the defence, can you? I think, obviously, Romeo's been injured for a few matches now.
He's a big loss, Charlie. You know, I mean, take Marlon out. I know that sometimes some people criticise his defensive work, but he does give us something going forwards.
I think when he has a great game, he's almost spectacular. And when he's bad, he's kind of...
It's horrid. Nice, it's like Jed well. In that way, isn't he? I mean, when Jed plays well, we play well, as they say.
Yeah.
I want to name check Bedvarsson, because I'm just looking at the second half now. So we actually went close as a corner. Right-sided corner, and Bedvarsson got like a near post header. Really nice move. And again, it's these fine margins, as they say, that's just gone wide, where if that had gone in, we've got a completely different game on our hands. And it's, you know, there's two chances that on another day, if one of those had gone in, we're in the driving seat. And it's just, we've just got to endure this run of bad luck or bad fine margin misses, that kind of idea, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think Bob Farson's actually that bad a footballer. I think his biggest weakness at the moment, as we saw with the miss the other week, is his confidence as a striker. He's missing chances that he'd probably take quite easily if he was more mentally kind of in a better place.
Confidence is all, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we had a better second half. It was never going to be on fire as a game. I had to laugh at the say no to piracy message that pops up on your screen on iFollow. I don't know if you get that as well.
I thought, even know that when iFollow doesn't work, they won't refund you. They're quite happy to put messages, don't download streams and that, which I find a bit hypocritical, really.
I wonder who would be bothering with it at some points in the recent games. And it's not being shown in, you mustn't show it in pubs, bars and restaurants for entertainment. I thought, which pub and bar is this that's doing this? You know, sitting there, you'd be falling asleep to some of it recently, but that's probably been a little bit harsh. I just want to mention Bart, great save on 87 minutes. I've got a header on target. He's tipped it wide. Again, you know, I know that it's... He had a couple of flaky moments against Wickham, but I mean, we just relentlessly expect world class saves from Bart Bielkowski. What a find he's been, Charlie. I think what a
it's
player.
Unbelievable, just unbelievable. I'm sure people have said it on here as well, but I think he's the best goalkeeper we've had possibly since Casey Keller.
Easily,
that's a long time now, actually.
Well, that's what 1990s you're talking about there. So that's a long time, and I would, from what I've seen, I mean, I stretch back to have seen Brian King, and I'd put him in that kind of category of greatness. I never saw Alex Stepney in a Millwall shirt, but you know, these are players that are international quality. I don't know what goalkeeper Poland are using. It must be something else. If
Bart Bielkowski, I was thinking that recently, just for him not to really be part of the setup. Well,
I suppose it's the. I mean, I've touched on this with Brian King when we had a couple of conversations with the great man over the lockdown, and he's got his new book out. But I think he would say the same without putting words in his mouth. But if you play for an unfashionable club like Mill, you tend not to get the attention. You just don't get the media focus. And I think Bart is probably at the moment. I mean, the form he's been in, some of the saves we've seen him make, some of the instinctive saves. I can't believe he's not going to be involved. I don't know if Poland are in Euro 2021 or whatever it's called now, but I can't believe he's not starting for his country. There must be some goalkeeper in the Polish goal. That's all I can say.
I think that is the nature of being a goalkeeper as well. You can do everything right, but because there's literally just one position available in a side,
absolutely,
there's going to be kind of these sort of injustices in terms of selection.
Where do you stand on the Ryan Woods debate, Charlie? I mean, he's a player that gets is maligned. He's in a difficult role, defensive midfielder. Not much glory to be had in that role, and you know, I always think he's playing at 75% somehow. But I could be, you know, I don't know if I'm being harsh on him. Do you like him as a player?
I like him. I think there's a sense of real technical ability about what he does. But I can also see what you mean. There is this very sort of casual sense about him. And it's almost like he has to... It's not just because he's playing in that position and he's sitting that deep. That you always feel like he has to carve out that much space for him to do what he does. Like, you'd be interested to see how he coped in a more sort of advanced position where he was going to get closed down. Yeah. By his opponent a little bit more. There's weeks when I think, oh, he's outstanding and he's just throwing the ball about and it looks excellent. And that, you know, we've really pulled Stoke's pants down in terms of getting him. And if we sign him permanently, then we're probably not going to have to actually pay like a fee for him. Yeah. And then there's other games where I feel like...
book his train ticket back to Stoke.
he sort of purposely removes himself from the action. Like you know, he kind of... he's very un-Millwall in a lot of respects. I used to feel that way about Sean Williams as well, actually, where it's kind of like, you know, you're a bit too much of a luxury in midfield. We want someone who's going to be... getting stuck in a little bit more.
Yeah. But that quality, I mean, I suppose you call that the Ben Thompson quality in some ways, a kind of enthusiasm, get stuck in. I think Gary Rowett just sees it as having a limit on how much impact it's going to have on the game. Rightly or wrongly, I think that Woods is very much Gary Rowett's kind of choice for midfield. He does what he wants him to do. And I think that's going to be the way it is going forwards. But I think Ryan Woods, in a way, sums up our current situation as a club, because we're doing okay, but somehow we're not enthralled by it. It's a very odd combination of things. But something that did enthrall me, Charlie, was Murray Wallace's overhead kick.
It's unbelievable.
I would have loved that to have got in. Oh, wait.
Watching the game, I thought the only thing that could have made this like more ridiculous if that was
the goal.
The moment to find it, really.
I couldn't. Because the screen was, it's hard to tell. You didn't have much zoom on the camera as it came into the melee. And I thought, who did that? Was that Bod Varson? I thought that, in your mind, you think of a creative player, but not dear old Murray. I love Murray. Yeah. He gets his criticism sometimes, but I think he's just a player that you said it earlier on in the conversation, Charlie. He's just developed strands to his game. I bet he didn't even know he could do some of this stuff at Scunthorpe when he was playing.
You'd be gutted, though. You'd be absolutely gutted weren't you? Like, to connect with the ball that well and do everything right, and it not to be kind of like not to be a goal or the match winner. Like, it's
absolutely
frustrating.
Absolutely,
I've seen a few people say that was kind of like his little tribute to Maradona.
Well, we're going to come back to that. I'm going to break away shortly to hear some of the chaps and their reviews of yesterday. But before I do that, Charlie, I'm going to come back to you after the break to talk about Maradona. But I just want to press you on the Ben Thompson wearing a Peaky Blinder meme that was put out by the club yesterday. I don't know if you saw it.
I haven't actually, I've got to say.
Oh, you got to see it, mate. My note to myself is that Millwall fans are a broad church, to say the least. But that's one of the few images I've ever seen that's drawn pretty much universal condemnation across the board. That brings together a lot of disparate opinion. I can tell you that much, listeners. Ben in a Millwall shirt wearing a Peaky Blinder hat and some show reference. I've never actually really watched Peaky Blinders.
But I haven't. It's something I've been meaning to get round to, and I might do it now that.
Yeah.
Tier 3 land.
I think what it is, we're going off topic here, but why not? This is the feature of our show, Charlie. But I think Peaky Blinders is a gangster program. I've always, gangsters to me have Chicago accents or, kind of, they're saying like the Craze or.
Yeah.
I think that's always been my hurdle with Peaky Blinders. But anyway, so whoever put together that meme in the Mill FC account, don't. I think that's probably the best
thing.
You're a disgrace. We're going to come back after a short break to hear the thoughts of the boys. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk to Charlie about Diego Maradona.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're enjoying Achtung Millwall Podcast, then why not help us grow the show and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? We'd love it. Love it. If you visit the Apple link in the show notes and leave us a rating and a review. Achtung Millwall is the number one podcast broadcasting from beautiful South Bermondsey. No show sponsors, no Patreon, and no TikTok accounts. Thank you, dear listeners, and as always, arrivederci Millwall.
We're unbeaten in 5 games. But they've all been draws and we've scored 2 goals. So that says it all. It is a dull watch at the moment. It feels like effort to watch. It really does. Again, more of the same today. Very scrappy match. Another side we were playing in Birmingham who were, you know, on poor form. So I'm sure they'll be pleased to stop the rot at least. But yeah, again, kind of few chances. We were defensively solid. They didn't really threaten. You know, a couple of half chances. Bodvarsson, again, Smith heads it over to him. And a better striker would have scored that. They wouldn't have got their feet in a twist and just messed the chance up. And then obviously that kind of Murray Wallace overhead kick at the end, which was actually a very good save and a great effort from a defender to try and do that, but ultimately it's not enough. We just seem so toothless going forward, you know, kind of just sloppy, giving it away when we get in a good area and never just really creating the chance. My voice sounds flat, I imagine, ladies and gentlemen, and that's because it is flat in general at the moment.
Well, I hate to say I told you so on the last pod that it would finish 0-0, and it finished 0-0. Yeah, that game went exactly how I thought it would be. I thought Millwall would be defensive. We started quite well and then lost our way. If that isn't the story of this season, I don't know what is. You know, makeshift side, let's not get any facts mixed up on that. We are down to the bare bones. Bodvarsson going off at the end, looking injured, might be a blessing in disguise. That allows, you know, him not to start for us for a while because he can't keep missing chances. He misses, for some unknown reason, he has an uncanny knack of getting into positions to take chances and just not be able to do it. But yeah, other than that, it was a really nothing game, wasn't it? It was very annoying. The referee didn't help it. But at the end of the day, you take a point. I'd probably be happier with a point away from home than I would be with a point at home. But, you know, 5 draws or whatever it is now, it's so tedious to watch. Get us back into the den so we can at least give them some abuse and maybe give them a rocket up their arse. Maybe, you know, if you're lucky enough to be in the 2000 next week, and you're there, by all means, give them every bit of encouragement, every bit of abuse that the people who aren't there feel like they should be able to. Come on, you Lions.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall.
Welcome back, dear listeners. I just want to pick up on a couple of points I've picked up from the internet, Charlie. Richard Corley, journalist, says that Mills run of 5 draws equals their football league record. Last time we did this was 1973-74, long time ago. I was around for that season. I don't remember the draw sequence, but there we are. I've got to admire Rob Abbott's positivity, Charlie. He says another point and another point closer to the top 6. Clean sheet, take the positives. That's a hard one. I know what you're meaning, Rob. Hard one to I'll try and tell myself that.
It's strange, isn't it, though? Because when we're playing like this, I find that people either go too positive or too negative.
Yeah.
People kind of choose their position and they stick by it.
Well, we're not fighting relegation. And you know, we are, as Rob rightly says, I mean, he's correct, actually. He's another point. We haven't been beaten and we got close to the top 6. That's true in that sense. So I think maybe results might put us a little bit behind. But anyway, we're in the zone. But then I'm looking at another one I've picked out here from JP, who says the players are lucky there are no fans, because the fans would not allow us to play like this. We would be going absolutely ballistic. Now, I can believe there's a certain element of truth in that, because it is a bit of a tough watch. But the rights and wrongs of going ballistic when you're on the fringes of the top 6 race, I just struggle with a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it's the whole debate whether football's entertainment or whether something else. I don't know.
But, and of course, you could argue that if the fans were there, that the dynamics, the games would be entirely different in the first
place. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an interesting thing. Will you be going back soon yourself, Charlie? Or are you?
I will not be able to really. I wasn't able to commit to getting a season ticket when they went back on sale. I regret not sort of renewing it very early on.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be in 2,000 will be the cap on the crowd, but that's better than.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very long time before I'm back at the Den. But I'm happy for anyone who gets to go back, to be honest. I think you've just got to see it as a positive that people are going to be getting back into the ground, no matter how few it is and what games it will be there for. It's just a good thing in general, I think, supporters getting back into stadiums.
I agree. I mean, it's for the good of the sport generally. It's good for the good of our club specifically. So, I mean, for me, it'll be a while before I can go back, just for more personal reasons. That I think until I've been jabbed, I think I'm in much the same position as I've always been in during lockdown, where you just can't take the chance for family reasons. It's just the way it is. So I'm going to be an iFollow fan for a little while yet, listeners. James Gibbons is asking, what's the point in 5 substitutions if we don't use any? Get Fergie on, so some delivery for Smith, and go 4-4-2. I like Ferguson, but I think he's always seems to be one of those players that makes an impact when he comes on. He doesn't often start, does he, Shane Ferguson?
I think in terms of his actual qualities, Shane Ferguson, I think he's
great crosser.
Player. Great dead ball specialist and crosser of the ball. And it seems just absolutely ideal to have him in the same team as Matt Smith. But
Matt Smith, great player. I mean, I know some say limited repertoire, Charlie, but give me that repertoire if it goes in the back of the net. And he does look our main threat, doesn't he?
And I think there's a certain element of snobbery towards the target man in football today.
Well,
I think he's one of a kind. Kind, isn't he, really? There aren't too many of his ilk about at this level of football anymore. Kind of looking at going down a couple of one level or two levels to see more players like him. But that snobbery doesn't account for the fact that he is actually really effective.
Very effective, given the right ball in the right situation. Grumpy Grimace says we're difficult to beat. Confidence and changing mentality comes with wins. I think what Grumpy's saying is that we've come close over all of the 5 games. Actually, they've all had chances, haven't gone in the net, which is, you know, is the essential debate. He says another stern test at Ewood Park on Wednesday when their season's fortunes could all change. I mean, you do get a sense one good win will get us going again, Charlie. I know, you know, a Preston-style win would do a power of good for us.
I think so. One of my biggest concerns is what happens if we are to concede first in one of these games, actually. How do we deal with that? Because it's all very well kind of drawing a game where we've gone 1-0 up and thrown it away or just had a 0-0. But say we were to concede first at Ewood Park in the week, you know, that's when I think you'll really see the measure of this side.
Last one I've got here, Matt Richards makes the point, it's another solid point away from home. And he makes a good point that in none of these draws, aside from Norwich, I don't even know about Norwich really, Matt, but it's none of these games have we struggled. We're not struggling, and that's actually a good thing, Charlie, isn't it? I mean, it's just at the other end that we've got a spark, and I think that's probably the best way we can leave it. Incidentally, I don't know if I'm getting old. Am I getting old, Charlie? My green-blue... green-blue ranges might be suffering. I was looking at the screen at times. Everyone seemed to be wearing the same kit. I think because it was so murky there as well. It didn't help, did it?
Yeah, we commented on it watching it yesterday saying that this is a bit of a bad colour clash, but it seemed that the fog became worse or just as it got darker during the game, the floodlights became less effective and over on the far side of the pitch was really struggling to see who was who, actually.
Oh, it was a tough watch at the best of times. Both teams seemed to be wearing the same kit to me and it all looked a bit murky. I thought, what am I doing sitting in my front room looking at something where I can't make the tail of half the action? But there we are. That's old age for you, Charlie Mahoney. It'll come to you, mate. Don't you worry about that.
it's nearly here, mate. Don't worry.
Now, I wanted to close the conversation because I love this tweet that you put out last night, and I know it's going to cause some to have apoplexy at their, as they're driving their car. So, but you've put out that you can't help but think that anyone slagging Diego Maradona comes across as a small-minded fucking bore. The game being nothing about people like him. And of course, there was a minute's silence yesterday. So I thought to myself, yes, Charlie, you've summed up what I instinctively know, that the likes of Diego Maradona are the tomato ketchup on the chips. That's what makes it interesting, isn't it? I don't know how you can not see it that way. But some... I mean,
Don't get me wrong. I understand the reasons as to why he got on people's nerves and angered people with what he did in the quarterfinal in 1986. But figuratively speaking, the man was a giant. Like, you know, that's why I watch football, because of people like him, taking away the fact that I've got an allegiance to a particular club.
Yeah, I mean,
he makes it what it is.
I mean, on the cheating point, I've got a counterpoint which has been sent to me by John Hedges. I've just selected one sentence from it, which I think relates. He says, talking about the Aaron in the week, and I suppose the same point you're making there, Charlie, about the cheating aspect of the Hand of God incident in 1986, which, you know, he asked, what about professional fouls? Shirt pulling, week in, week out, all teams do it. And some, you know, sometimes it's even kind of acknowledged as an accepted part of the game, the going down easily, the winning of free kicks. I mean, it's a very hard balance to strike, isn't it? Because I think if Gary Lineker had handballed the goal in the net, we'd have been saying, what a great
knife on them.
That's right. And I do think there's something in this, because we were at the receiving end of the Hand of God, shall we call it, and, you know, there's loads of videos doing the rounds online where people making a counterpoint, physical treatment that was dished out, not just by England. I mean, other teams too tried to nullify Diego Maradona, didn't they?
Also, if you watch him play for Napoli at the time in Serie A, I mean, people are just kicking lumps out of him every week.
That was the mid-80s Italian Football League, one of the most cynical environments in world football. I mean, you can't tell me that it was, you know, our treatment of Diego Maradona looked quite lightweight compared to what we would have got when given account. And I can't believe the Argentine leagues are some kind of saintly air of Corinthian values, or it's good man, sir, well played there. I mean, he would have been brought up with this. So part of his skill, I think, probably came from riding out these kinds of tackles. I mean, I remember I heard a podcast. I think it was Graham Hunt who did a series of interviews, and one of them was with Chris Waddle, who began his young career playing for his dad's pub side at the age of 13 or 14, up against blokes, you know. And again, because he was good and he could outdo them on the field skill-wise, they would try and physically assault him practically. And he had to learn to, that when the tackle was coming in high, that you rode it, you avoided it, you jumped it, you know, which would enrage them still more instead of trying to do him another way. But I mean, it's a tough school of education, but he put it down to his skill in later life, down to that ability to ride tackles. I'm sure Diego Maradona would have had the same kind of idea, playing against blokes often, to learn his game.
I think I read something about him saying something very similar to that. He said he felt his greatest attribute was the ability to start avoiding the kind of tackles that he was facing.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And this would have been late 70s, early 80s football in Argentine, and then on into the Italian leagues in later life. So, no, I make you right. I think players like Maradona, whether you love them or hate them, the fact they've caused a reaction in you is what the game is about. It's there's a big danger in football, I think, of sanitisation generally. And, you know, obviously no one wants to see rule breaking as a norm go unpunished, but equally it comes with a turf, Charlie, isn't it? I mean, I think every great player bends the rules slightly.
And I think one thing to say as well is that in that particular game, that quarter final, I'm sure it was mentioned in that documentary that was released last year, that quarter final was the perfect summation of everything good and bad about the man, because obviously after that incident, he scores what I think was voted as the greatest goal in World Cup history.
Must be one of the greats. You know, there might be one or two others that challenge it, but it's one of the great individual goals of all time.
It's just unbelievable when you watch back. Like,
Only ET against Crystal Palace on New Year's Day in 95 comes close. So
we'll supersede it.
Charlie, that is wonderful stuff. It's great to talk to you again, mate. It's been really entertaining stuff. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Taking your time out of Sunday morning. Charlie Mahoney, ladies and gentlemen, big thank you to him. And we will be back in midweek after Blackburn away. I think we have, I have Mike Hayden lined up for the Real Mill Fan Show in midweek. So until then, it is from myself and Charlie. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Mill. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. A River Direction Mill. Till next time.